Thanks for tuning in to the Falcon Theater Podcast. I'm your host, Dean Jansen, mild-mannered manager of the Falcon Theater in Tisdale, Saskatchewan. Together with my son, Noah Jansen, the self-professed movie snob, we're going to enlighten and entertain you with our immense movie knowledge. So sit back and relax. But if you're currently driving a vehicle, don't relax too much. But enjoy this episode of the Falcon Theater Podcast. Hello, everyone, and welcome to the sixth podcast of the Falcon Theater Podcast, starring me and my son and I. I guess that would be the right way to say it. How's it going tonight, Noah?
Good, how are you?
I'm doing great. Tomorrow, apparently, I'm on strike, so, you know, I got lots to do tomorrow, but today I have nothing but time to devote to you and the podcast.
Well, perfect. Well, at least it'll be a warmish day. It's not like it's minus 40 anymore.
Well, not minus 40, but it's a heck of a wind and it is cold. So I'm going to layer up. I'm going to put on lots of layers and then I can take the layers off as I need to.
That's a good idea.
Yeah, your dad's pretty smart.
Once in a while.
This isn't my first rodeo.
Oh, I'm well aware.
When it comes to striking this year, it's my third rodeo, actually. Anyway, yeah, I suppose we should get started. I'd like to begin by just explaining what's going on at the Falcon Theater in the next several weeks. We have a pretty big lineup coming up. This weekend, we have the Kung Fu Panda 4, which is good because we haven't had a family movie since Migration. So looking forward to that. And then the weekend after that, we have Imaginary, which is by Blumhouse, the guys that made Five Nights at Freddy's.
So oh, nice.
More of an original horror story. It taps into the idea of imaginary friends and what are imaginary friends. So did you have any imaginary friends growing up, Noah?
I mean, if I did, I feel really bad. I've forgotten about them. I honestly don't think I ever did. I had real friends.
I always wonder about your brother though. Like especially that.
Oh, we all wonder about him.
I mean with regards to imaginary friends.
Oh, you mean about that.
Well, the time he went to your mother and asked what happened to my sister, and mom was like, you've never had a sister. We never had a little girl. And he said, well, the little girl that used to play in my room all the time. And she used to be mad because there were no boy toys. There were just girl toys. So I don't know if that was an imaginary friend that he was playing with or if our house was just haunted. Well, you know, one or the other, I suppose.
I mean, could be both. Could have been a ghost friend.
Well, and I think that's what this movie's kind of about. And it's about imaginary friends that become or something.
Blumhouse always, I like how they take some very unique concepts and they always kind of have their own little flair to it, you know, like they have their signature kind of like, it's cheesy, but you know, it has a couple good scares. They don't go with these huge budgets. They just kind of, you know, do something they kind of see, at least seem that they care about when they're telling their story, you know, so I'm sure it'll be a fun time. Or a scary time. Maybe it'll be a scary time. Maybe it won't be fun at all.
Hopefully it's both. Fun and a little scary. I guess we'll see. See next weekend. We also have Ghostbusters coming up and Godzilla X Kong we talked about previously. So yeah, those are the movies that I've got booked. I'm currently working on booking the rest of April. Mm-hmm. And haven't gotten confirmation on those yet. So those
any possible sneak peeks on what might be coming?
No, it's going to remain as a surprise right now.
Oh,
wait till I know what we're getting for sure.
I guess that's fair. We don't want to promise stuff that won't happen.
That's right. Yeah,
it's just Star Wars. It's just Star Wars, guys. That's all we're getting.
100% Star Wars all the time.
You guys are, it's just going to be us. It's this theater's closed. It's just us watching Star Wars.
Yeah. No, can't. We have to let other people in too, you know.
Oh, fine. I guess.
Ourselves.
I guess.
Besides, you are working all the time. You never come here to watch anything anyway.
That is true.
You got to go to that crappy IMAX in Regina and watch there.
I know, the sound system's horrible.
So what have you been watching recently, speaking of watching?
Well, I finally got around to watching Poor Things.
You watched Poor Things?
Yes, I really enjoyed it. I thought it was like a fantastic movie. I absolutely loved like the production design behind it. Like I liked how it was kind of the steampunk-esque, but like also kind of like futuristic world. Like it was a very, very unique kind of world they built. Like it felt old, but then you'd see like just like, you know, the horse carriage and it's like coming, but then you see it's not a horse. It's a vehicle that just has like a horse head on the front of it that appears to be that. All the like the technology, it seems old, but it's all also very kind of like futuristic and advanced, you know?
Yeah.
I thought, I after seeing it, totally agree why Emma Stone won the Oscar for that. Her portrayal, like, it was such a unique character, you know? Like,
and not easy to play. Like,
well, no, like it almost kind of reminded me a bit of what's that movie, Flowers for Algernon, I'm thinking of, when there's like the guy who is, you know, a little more simple and he gets like the surgery and becomes smart. It's like as you seeing him become smart and everything and learn, kind of like you're almost seeing her as like a child in an adult body as she's kind of like learning everything again, you know?
I can see why you would have drawn parallels. I've never actually seen Flowers for Algernon, but I know the story. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. I read the book in high school. One of the few books I've read, but I really liked too, like just like the dialogue, the way like they almost talk in like a bit of like a Shakespearean way. Like it's a very like Victorian formal kind of speak, but then there'll be certain moments where it gets obviously played for comedic effect and they go into these like almost like a modern like cadence with their voices. Like the scene when Bella's talking to Mark Ruffalo's character and she says, well, what do you mean? How does someone just disappear? And he stops and he's like, what the fuck are you talking about? Like I burst out laughing during that scene. Like it comes out of nowhere. Like Mark Ruffalo too was absolutely amazing in it. I was also like,
he just really was. I think he's an underrated actor actually.
100%. You know,
people see him as Bruce Banner and they're like, oh, he's the Hulk. No, he's so much more than that.
Yeah, no, 100%. Like him in, he was in, what is the movie, Zodiac, and then also the movie Spotlight. He is absolutely fantastic in both of those movies. No, I 100% agree. Like, yeah, he's in big movies, but his like true acting chops, like he has quite a range of an actor.
Mm-hmm. I agree. And I also watched Poor Things and absolutely loved it as well. It's an incredible movie. I wouldn't have given it Best Picture. But you're absolutely right. Emma Stone was incredible.
It's a very different movie. Like that was thing. Like it's something that I've never really seen a movie like that before, and that's great. Like it was out there. It's very weird. A lot more like it has a lot of very, very, I guess you can just flat out say like just very sexual scenes, you know, in the way like she's very, kind of discovering like
for a mainstream movie. It was,
yeah. Like that, it kind of caught me off guard. I was like, oh, okay. We're going right into that.
I was just looking here. It only made $34 million at the box office.
Well,
and that's not surprising because it's not a movie for everybody.
No, and I don't think it had a very wide release either.
Oh, yeah.
Like I'm curious out of how many theaters that was playing in, you know.
I'm not sure. I don't have that, but I know when it came out, it wasn't in my radar when I was picking movies. Not that I would have picked it. It probably wouldn't have been a great movie for the Falcon Theater, but
No.
Definitely if you're into things that are different, unique, and weird, then give it a go.
Yeah. No, I love Willem Dafoe, how he just kept talking about how like his dad performed experiments on him and his like assistant. It's just like, what are you talking about? Like he's just totally like it's like you would think that it would almost be played straight, like the guy would be like, oh, okay, but the way certain characters react is almost how the audience is reacting. Like, what are you like? It's a very real reaction, like not in that world. Like, it's almost like they are out of that world, but in it at the same time, you know?
Yeah, absolutely. It was great. It was great.
Yeah, no. And it's on Disney Plus. If anybody wants to check it out, it is on Disney Plus.
There you go. Little shout out for Disney Plus. Not that they need it. Another movie that I watched recently was Argyle, a movie that I wanted to watch, but we were actually in Regina the weekend that it played here in Tisdale, so I didn't get to watch it then. And I've since watched it, and your mother really liked it, Noah, but I did not appreciate it.
Yeah, I kind of read because there's always the thing of who is Argyle.
Mm-hmm.
And I read the twist, and it sounded like they didn't even really know what they were trying to.
They had a good vision, and there were like many twists.
But that's the thing. Like it was almost like there was it kept on twisting. That's what I interpreted. Yeah,
absolutely, it did.
And maybe got a little muddled in the execution.
A little bit. Yeah, I agree. It did. And then the other, last podcast, you talked about seeing Dune, and I, of course, got the opportunity to watch Dune 1 and 2 here just recently, so that was good.
And what did you think of Dune 2?
Well, I thought Dune 1 was better than Dune 2. Again, I hated the book, but I appreciate the movies. But there were some things I really didn't know when I watched the movies.
100%.
Because I don't know the lore that well. Yeah. I read the book, but I don't know the lore. So thankfully, some of my buddies who went to the movie and know the lore stuck around and kind of talked to me after. And
yeah, I did a lot of reading and kind of watching some videos that kind of explained it. And I want to go back now and see it under a different lens. I felt that the second half of the movie, like kind of when, you know, the action starts, if you would, it's like, because it's a very like not slow, but it's like building, and then it's almost just like, okay, boom, here we are, and it's attack, you know?
Yeah,
at the very end,
it was by far the loudest movie I think we have ever played at the theater.
It was pretty remarkable that final battle and everything, like seeing that in the IMAX when the sandworms are coming out of the sand.
Yeah.
Wow, that was like our seats were shaking and vibrating as we were watching it.
Were you in one of those vibrating seat things
though? That's the thing, we were not.
Yeah, my subwoofers had trouble keeping up with the lows, like when the ship's coming, it's that that real low
sound.
My subwoofers at the theater were really having a hard time keeping up. They were vibrating like crazy. I actually had to bring the volume down a little bit from where I normally play it.
Oh, really?
Too much. Yeah, it was too much.
And Austin Butler, he was one of my like favorites of the entire thing. I thought he was like fantastic in the movie.
Oh yeah, yeah. No, absolutely.
As Fade Rotha.
Yeah, well, you know, he's a really good actor.
I'm really excited to see where his career is going to go from here, because he's been really showing his range on what he's able to do in the last couple of years as well.
Yeah, like when I remember watching the trailers for the Elvis movie, and I was like, what is this? Like goth Elvis, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And I wasn't giving it much cred, but man, he was fantastic as Elvis. Like I it blew me away how good he was.
No, 100%, yeah.
Okay, let's move on. I just noticed today actually that the new Furiosa trailer dropped, so I took time to watch it. You watched it as well, son?
Yeah, I did watch it as well. I'm very excited for it.
So what did you learn from the new trailer?
Well, I'm gonna go out on a limb. Like, I'm assuming, because it's not Charlize Theron, that it's a prequel. I'm assuming.
Yes, it is. Yeah.
I'm like, and I mean, I feel like that's kind of also in a bit of the like in the Mad Max universe, like the storytelling, like for if you were to take from the first, you know, Mad Max to this movie. Like the movies have never been told in order. Like even like Mad Max Fury Road, like is it a different timeline or is it the same Max? Like
he's never really explained.
You know, which is fine. I think that's up to the audience, you know. So yeah. I mean who knows? Maybe this is a different Furiosa. Yeah, maybe Furiosa is a title, not a person. Who knows? Probably not. I'm probably looking too much into it. But Anya Taylor-Joy, like I really enjoy her as an actress. Like in The Menu, I thought she was fantastic.
Yeah, that was a really good role for her.
You know, so I'm curious to see what she's gonna do. You know, I actually have something kind of embarrassing to admit, and you can't get mad at me for this.
Well, if it's what I'm thinking, go ahead and say it.
When I saw, I've seen it since, and I love it. The first time I saw Mad Max Fury Road, I fell asleep.
Oh, okay.
In the Falcon Theater. No, I love the movie. I was at the golf course. I had been up since like 5 a.m. and I went and saw it that night. And I think I fell asleep about halfway through because it was a hot summer day and I was so tired. But I have seen it since in full and I love it. But I'm sad I didn't get to see it all in theaters.
That's a hard movie to fall asleep in too because it's pretty action packed.
Yeah, no, I mean there's worse movies you could fall asleep in.
What?
Like Schindler's List.
I knew you were going to say that. Wasn't my fault. So I'll have to go back and watch that.
I'm sorry that the Holocaust bored you.
I was tired. I was coaching basketball. I'd been up late. Anyway.
No, but I'm very excited for the movie. When does it come out? Is it this year or is it next year?
No, I'm pretty sure it's this year. That's the second trailer that's dropped, which usually means let me take a quick peek and see here. If there's a release date on it. It says 2024. Okay. Give me a sec. May 24th. So just
that's sooner. Yeah. I was thinking it was gonna be like a summer movie, but I guess May's summer in the movie world.
Yeah. And in the trailer, Chris Hemsworth plays this warlord called Dementis. I was really intrigued just from the trailer by his character.
Yeah, he almost has like a bit of like in some of the scenes when he's like kind of turning his head. He almost has a bit of a Jesus kind of like Messiah presence in the way there. So I'm curious if it's like a cult or something like that that he runs. But
hopefully the Christian people listening to us don't get offended by us calling a
oh no, what are they gonna do?
Mad Max Jesus. Also, there was glimpses of Joe from Fury Road in there.
Yeah.
Immortal Joe.
Now yeah. And if I remember this correctly, is he not the actor who played him, is he not like a character earlier established in the Mad Max, like the old Mad Max movies?
Oh, I didn't hear that.
I will look. I'm fairly certain I read that he was in the earlier movies.
Like the actor was in the earlier movies or his character was in the earlier movies? So I don't remember his.
Anyway,
while you're looking that up, I'm going to move on. Talk to our listeners while you're looking that up. Find out if he's there. I read that.
Okay, sorry. I'm going to just cut you off. Oh. I found it. There was an actor who played the character in the Mad Max franchise, Toe Cutter, and he also played a Immortan Joe. So I don't know if it's supposed to be the same character, but there is the same actor played a Immortan Joe. It looks like he's passed away, so this might be a different actor playing him, but also played a character in the original Mad Max. So I think it's maybe like a fan theory that he's the same character.
Oh, okay. That probably makes sense because I don't think that the Fury Road was really connected to the other ones in any other way.
Yeah, no. So, he was in the actor who played him in Fury Road was also in the original Mad Max movie.
He must be old.
He's dead.
Oh,
he died really in 2020. So, he was 73.
How did he do this movie if he's dead?
I'm thinking, I guess, like Weekend at Bernie's style, maybe.
Hold him up and move him around throughout the entire.
It's like, guys, that would be
so fucking funny.
You know, we have CGI, right? No, this is cheaper. He's rotting in the set. That's what we gotta fill fast. Go.
Oh no, we got him embalmed. It's okay. Okay. So yeah, Weekend at Bernie's Furiosa.
I like it.
Crossover. It's a crossover. Okay. The next thing. So I was reading that Marvel has, I don't know what the word is. They've said that all of the Netflix Marvel series are now considered to be MCU canon.
Which I'm curious, because that like I understand that they're saying that it's been canonized, but if I remember correctly, in the Daredevil TV show, they talk about like the incident and talk about like what happened in the first Avengers movies. Do they not?
They might. It's been so long since I watched it that
I
can't remember.
And when we see Matt Murdock in the Spider-Man No Way Home, so like. I kind of thought that just canonized it in that movie as well, you know?
Yeah, very
maybe they're just making it official. I don't know. But I'm excited to see it. I love
I know they're working on a new Daredevil show.
Yeah, I mean, I loved 4/5 of the Netflix Marvel cast, so
you didn't like Iron Fist.
Yeah, no.
Nobody liked Iron Fist.
No,
I was so disappointed because growing up, there were three comic books that I bought all the time. Spider-Man, The Hulk, and Power Man and Iron Fist. And I loved Power Man and Iron Fist. Those were like two of my favorite. So when they screwed up Iron Fist so badly, I was so disappointed. He was so whiny and irritating and annoying. But on the other hand, I loved Jessica Jones.
She was fantastic, and like Kristen Ritter did an absolute like amazing job. Like she, like it's almost kind of like the same I would say with like how Hugh Jackman is Wolverine. Like she is Jessica Jones. Like she fits that so well.
For sure. And I know they're making a new Daredevil show because he's the flashy one. He's the one that people talk about. But I would love to see more Jessica Jones.
No, 100%.
I thought her character was. Just so interesting, the whole thing.
And like, as much as I enjoyed the Kingpin as a villain in Daredevil, I also thought that like for the Jessica Jones show, David Tennant as like Kilgrave, like the purple man, he was the best villain out of all of those Netflix Marvel shows. Like David Tennant, I don't think can really be bad in anything. Like he's one of the best actors out there. But like, I was sad. Spoilers alert! If you haven't seen Jessica Jones, but like his character does die, but it's somebody that
I ever really dead.
Well, that's in the Disney world. I don't think so. I wouldn't even be mad.
They've got Joe and apparently he's dead.
Well, exactly. Literally. but like he is a character that I wouldn't even be mad if they brought him back. Cause he was just so fantastic.
It was such an interesting storyline for that first season of Jessica Jones. And you're right. Kingpin's great. What's his name?
Vincent D'Onofrio.
Yeah. Vincent D'Onofrio is just awesome. But,
have you watched the new that Echo show?
I have no idea what you're talking about.
There's a new show. It's a Disney Plus like Marvel show, like the Moon Knight, like Loki, all those shows, and Kingpin's the main villain in it.
Why have I not heard about this? You got to put these in our notes so that I can look it up ahead of time.
Well, I didn't know. I just assumed you knew about Vincent D'Onofrio. Yeah, no, he's the main villain in the Echo TV show.
Oh, well, I'm going to have to definitely check that out because I think Vincent D'Onofrio is great.
No, I agree.
Okay, so we finally got a chance to sit down and watch the Oscars. And we didn't watch it on Oscar night because we were all busy. But
I don't have satellite TV to watch.
Well, and that too. But we got a chance to watch it following that. So was there anything that you thought was surprising?
I mean, I would be surprised. I was surprised that it went very smoothly, because the last couple Oscars have all been kind of a bit of a crap show with something happening. Like, I don't think any big drama or like not planned moments happened. I think the only thing was they started a little late during the live broadcast due to protests.
Is that why they started late?
Yeah, there was a bunch of the actors, like, their limos were blocked by about 2,000 protesters, so they had to like run like 10 blocks to get to the theater.
Well, they would have loved that. Yeah, in their dresses.
Oh, exactly. I really enjoyed it. I thought it was a really, you know, well put together show.
I was reading that it was the top rated, like, in 4 or 5 years or something, like the most viewers they've had.
Well, and I mean, also there was a lot of buzz. Like, a lot of the movies were ones that people, I think, had heard about. Oppenheimer and Barbie were some big ones.
Yeah, Barbenheimer was still a thing, right?
You know, I think pretty much all of the awards, like, there was no real upsets. Like, I know a lot of people were like a little bit upset that Lily Gladstone didn't win, but again, after seeing Emma Stone's performance, like, I don't think I could have seen somebody else playing Emma Stone's role. I could have seen someone else playing Lily Gladstone's role. She was fantastic. Yeah. She was fantastic. She did an amazing job. But, you know, it could have been filled by another actor. And it was, you know, a very good role that could have been, you know, maybe a little bit worse. But, no, Emma Stone definitely deserved that. I was so happy that Godzilla Minus One one for best visual effects.
Yeah, I was going to say that for me was a bit of a surprise.
You know,
with a
budget of $12 million and they're beating out, you know, Guardians of the Galaxy and Mission Impossible for their special effects that are probably hundreds of millions of dollars. Like, just kind of goes to show how much hard work. And they seem so excited. They seem so happy. Like, another part I really liked, I really enjoyed the speech that the director for that documentary, The 20 Days in Mariupol, made.
Mm-hmm.
And I really loved how, you know, he was talking about how if he could trade that Oscar, and he wishes he had never had to make this documentary. You know, I thought that was a really...
So if our listeners don't know what 20 Days in Mariupol is about, tell them what it's about.
So from what I gathered about the documentary, it's covering the siege of Mariupol in Ukraine with, like, the Russian invasion, everything like that. Interestingly enough, from what I heard, that it was that speech was blocked from a lot of international broadcasts. So it was not seen in, like, Europe and stuff like that, you know?
I heard that too, and I thought that was interesting.
You know?
But I noticed that they didn't play them off the stage. Like,
yes.
You know, when they're giving their speech and they're taking too long, they start playing the music. With that one, they did not start the music. They let them talk.
One other thing another speech I thought that was pretty good. I'm happy that they were speaking about it. For the best international film with the Zone of Interest, Jonathan Glazer, the guy who accepted the award, used part of his speech as a Jewish man himself. It's a movie about the Holocaust, and used that time to kind of speak about the issues and the genocide and everything that's going on in Palestine. I actually read a thing that apparently, like, over like 500 other, like, artists and stuff are trying to, like, denounce him now for his speech following him supporting Palestine, even though he himself is a Jewish man. I thought that was a bit interesting, but I'm happy that he still stood by and, like, from the sounds of it, has kind of, like, not let it phase him. But I think for me, the highlight of the entire thing was Ryan Gosling's performance of I'm Just Ken.
Everybody's talking about, right?
I have gone back just to watch it. Like, he's such a good performer, just all around. He honestly should have won an award not for best song, but just for that performance in general. Like, I don't know, I think the Emmys does give out for like best award show awards, which is weird. Like for the Grammys and the Oscars, like there's production awards. Like just in that, his performance alone was absolutely fantastic. You know, we could just tell that they had so much fun, you know, probably choreographing and planning it. So yeah, no, those were kind of my highlights.
And my hot take there is because I'd heard about it. Of course, we hadn't watched it the night of, and we watched it a few days later, and everybody was talking about the song and the I'm Just Ken and the performance. I was actually a little bit underwhelmed. I watched it and I went, okay, yeah.
And oh, really?
Song and dance. Yeah. Like I didn't, it didn't impress me much, as Shania Twain once said. I don't know. It was fine. It was good, but I guess maybe
I'm more the target audience for Ken.
Maybe you are. Maybe I'm too old. I'm just an old guy, I guess.
You're just old.
You know, yeah. You know, the one thing that I really got a kick out of was when Kate McKinnon and America Ferrera were on stage to do their presentation, and they were talking about the dinosaurs and whether they were real and stuff like that. And then Kate, during the broadcast, said, "What is Jeff Goldblum real?" And America says, "No." And Kate's like, "Well, who have I been sending my tasteful nudes to? My tasteful nudes to." That's hard to say. Kate McKinnon asked, "Who have I been sending my tasteful nudes to?" And the camera cut to Steven Spielberg, and he points at himself and shakes his head. I freaking died laughing. I thought, like, he doesn't take himself seriously. I love the fact that he's willing to be in on the joke.
No, same with Scorsese. I've seen him, like, Ricky Gervais has kind of, like, there was a joke, I think, at one of the Golden Globes about Scorsese comparing the Marvel movies to amusement park rides. And he makes a joke being like, you know, how would he know? He's not tall enough to go on them anyways. And you see Martin Scorsese, he's like, it's true. Like, I literally enjoy that. Those guys that you don't see them in front of the camera. Like, they're the guys who are behind making the magic. But you see that they're just as goofy as the rest of them, you know?
Yeah, yeah. On the other hand, Robert De Niro looked like he was just pissed off for being there.
Well, I think that's just kind of his look now.
I don't know. He just sat there with this dour look on his face.
Listen, the guy's like in his 80s. He's probably just wanted to go to bed and had to be there, you know?
I'm in my 50s. I just want to go to bed, too.
Oh, man, yeah. I'm in my 20s and I just want to go to bed. What is this going to be when I'm 80?
You just won't get out of bed, maybe. I don't know. And the whole nude thing with John Cena was great. It was
it's a funny little bit. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. It was well done. Anyway, I enjoyed the Oscars for the most part as well. And as you know, like you and your mother always watched them, and I would tune in here and there, in and out. But I've gotten more into it lately. So, yeah. Speaking of Ryan Gosling and I'm Just Ken, I also wanted to talk for a bit about the Fall Guy movie that's coming.
Yeah, I had no... It was a trailer for this when I went and saw Dune 2 in the IMAX. I had never heard of this movie, had no clue about it, and I think what Ryan Gosling is, he can, kind of like with Mark Ruffalo, he can play a goofy character, and he can also play these more serious characters, you know?
So let me enlighten you a little bit. The Fall Guy was a television show that ran from November of 1981 to May of 1986. So if you do the math, I was between 12 and 16 years old during that run. And it starred Lee Majors, who was the $6 million man.
I know that. We have the technology, right?
Yeah, yeah.
We can rebuild it.
I loved the Fall Guy TV show. I never missed an episode. When it was on TV, it didn't matter what else was going on, I was watching it. Now, you couldn't like just PVR it back in those days, so you had to make sure you watched it at the right time. So Lee Majors was a stuntman who was also a bounty hunter, and you know, from the trailer that's coming out. So they're making a movie of the Fall Guy. From the trailer, it looks like it's a stuntman who's going out to save the star of the movie. And Emily is making the movie.
I had no clue that it was based, like, until now. Like, I had no clue it was based after an 80s TV show. I do appreciate, too, we're seeing Ryan Gosling, Emily Blunt. That's a Barbenheimer kind of combo happening now.
Crossover, yeah, that's right.
Yeah.
Yeah. But, you know, watching the trailers, I don't know. Other than the fact that it's a stuntman who's going out to, like, kick ass, it doesn't look really that much like the original, except I see the truck. And if you were a Fall Guy watcher back in the 80s, you know the truck I'm talking about. It was a 1981 GMC Sierra Grand. Everybody wanted that truck. That was the truck in television at the time, and everybody was in love with that truck. And I saw in the trailer for the new movie, it looks like he's driving a very similar truck. So I really hope that they stuck with that, because, you know, that truck wasn't quite up there with, like, the A-Team van or Knight Rider. You know, it wasn't quite as well known as those vehicles, but it was still a big, big vehicle for us Gen Xers growing up.
You know, one thing I think is really interesting, you know, talking about Ryan Gosling in this role as a stuntman who has to go kick ass. When I was watching it, I don't know if you've ever seen the movie Drive.
I think came out
in 2011. So the movie, it's almost like this is like a comedic version of the movie Drive, because in that movie, he plays a stunt driver who has to, I think it's been a while since I've seen it, but he has to, you know, kind of deal with these mafia type guys and everything.
Oh,
but
yeah,
it's all played in a serious sense. So, you know, he's familiar with being a stunt driver, I guess.
Yeah. So I'm hoping to have the Fall Guy come to the Falcon Theater here, maybe end of May, something like that. I think it comes out start of May. So, you know, watch for it. Come into the Falcon Theater. Coming to the theater near you fairly soon, hopefully.
Hopefully.
So do you got, do you know anything tonight?
I know a couple things. I know a couple things.
Why don't you enlighten us? Tell us, what do you know?
I'd love to enlighten. So did you know that what the first movie to use profanity was?
I don't know that answer to that.
You will know once I say it. It's a very famous line. As far as the internet
frankly,
tells
me, my dear, I don't give a damn.
That is correct. That is the first time profanity was used in a film. Now, again, I'm getting this information off the internet, so who knows how accurate it is, but according to what I was reading, it was so scandalous when it was found out that was how they ended the movie, that with them saying damn, there were some theaters that refused to show the movie due to the language.
We've come a long way. For those of you,
the funny thing is nowadays the movie is rated G.
Is it really?
It's rated G. So,
for those that don't know, that is my wife's favorite movie. It is Gone with the Wind. We didn't actually mention that. But no, I didn't realize that it would be rated G now.
People in the 30s were like, slavery, racism, that's fine, but don't you dare say that D word.
No kidding. It was a different time back then.
Oh, it truly was. I have another one actually here too.
This one, you know something else.
I know more than one thing. This one kind of relates a little bit to a bit of what we were talking about today. It's a Godzilla fact actually. So I was doing some reading. In the 1980s in Japan, there was a story writing contest that was open to the public. A dentist ended up submitting a story that won the contest. And in 1989, they turned his script into Godzilla versus Biollante, I believe is how you pronounce it, which is about this kaiju creature that is created from, like, cells of Godzilla. And even with this being written by just a dentist, a guy that has no, like, other credits, The movie actually received very favorable reviews and still holds a 71% on Rotten Tomatoes. The one really neat thing I was kind of reading about the movie is this was made in 1989, and the plot heavily involves themes of like bioengineering and biotechnology and like how cloning can go wrong. All of this very, you know, happening 4 years before Jurassic Park popularized, you know, that theme of, you know, can we clone it? Should we clone it? You know, are we playing God and everything like that? So I thought it was kind of interesting that, you know, I'm sure there were other movies that had maybe dabbled in that, but, you know, Jurassic Park is, I think, kind of what popularized the gene splicing of, you know, oh, and now it's gone awry. So I thought it was interesting that a couple of years before that, you know, Japan was already ahead of the train with this dentist thinking a little bit outside the box.
Yeah, that's really cool. I didn't know. I vaguely remember something about that movie, 1989, but it obviously didn't leave a big imprint on me.
Well, I don't know how big were the Godzilla movies in Saskatchewan in the 80s.
They weren't huge, no.
No, not as huge as in Japan.
We were more about stuntmen being bounty hunters. That was more our jam back then.
Exactly, yeah.
Or bad guys, you know, who get together and take down other bad guys, you know, because they're driving a black van and they're like, anyway, I was trying to explain, but it wasn't working. So no, I'm just going to leave it. We're just going to move on.
I think that's for the best. I think it's for the best. I do got some Star Wars news. The first trailer for the new Star Wars series, the Star Wars The Acolyte, came out today. Comes out on June 4th on Disney Plus. I'm very excited for it.
Really? You're excited for Star Wars content?
Yes, I know. Surprise. But even more so.
Take that with a grain of salt, people, because he's excited for all Star Wars content.
But if I can explain as to why, the thing that really interests me is the show is actually taking place 100 years before episode one. So this is actually going to be the earliest in any Star Wars media we have ever, like, there's been books and there's been comics and video games that have taken place before the movies, but this is the first time we've ever had a live action TV or movie feature stuff that has happened before and quite a while before the mainline Star Wars movies. From what I gather, we don't know a ton about the premise of the plot yet. The premise, from what I've heard, is a former Padawan is reuniting with her Jedi Master, and they're investigating a series of crimes. Now, in the trailer, they talk about
this is Law and Order, Acolyte, Law and Order Star Wars,
Jedi Council, I guess. In the trailer, they talk about there's a person that's been, you know, killing Jedi. Now, not everybody here probably knows Star Wars like the back of their hand like I do, but in Star Wars in episode one, when Darth Maul is revealed and Qui-Gon first fights him on Tatooine, that's a big moment for the Jedi. I can't remember the exact quote, but they make a comment that the Sith have not been seen in like 1,000 years. Right. And the Acolyte, from what I've gathered, is supposed to be like part of like a secret Sith organization. You know,
okay. Yeah.
The one thing I really, so the Jedi during this period, it's taking place during the High Republic. If you are interested more, there is a plethora, I think there's probably almost 15 or so books that have been in the last couple of years covering the High Republic, which has taken place a couple hundred years before the mainline Star Wars movies. And so we're kind of getting
I'm going to interrupt you here.
Oh.
So in the game that I just played Jedi
Survivor.
Thank you. The guy that's in that, the bad guy, is he a High Republic guy?
Yes. Yes. So okay. He is part of the High Republic era.
Okay. Yeah. So, Continue on.
Possibly there might be a reference to him in it. But the High Republic is supposed, 'cause like when you see the Jedi in the Star Wars prequel movies, like, this is the end of the Jedi. This is their downfall. The High Republic, this is the height of the Jedi. That's why it's called the High Republic. This is when they were the strongest that they would be. And this is apparently kind of, the show is supposed to be kind of the beginning of the end. This is the series that then leads to the downfall of the Jedi that we see in the prequels. The one character I'm really excited to see, his name is Kelbaka or Kelvaka. He's a Wookiee Jedi.
Oh, that's so cool.
I'm really excited to see him. We're like, looks like there's going to be a lot of lightsaber action. And the thing I like about it too is like, it's going to be separated from, like, as much as I love The Mandalorian, I love all of the shows, you know, there is a lot of fan service, which for the most part I love, you know, but I like that they're telling a new story with new characters away from the movies that can be its own thing and breathe on its own, you know?
They can't pull Luke Skywalker into this one.
No, exactly, you know? So what I am really curious to see, because we know he would be alive, is if they will have Yoda in it, because we know he's around during the High Republic. Yeah. This was the High Republic, I believe he was, 100 years before he might be on the Jedi Council now. In the books, he's not on the Council yet. He's still, you know, only 500. He's a young man.
He's a teenager.
Pretty much, you know. And I'm also curious if we're going to maybe perhaps see a live-action Darth Plagueis, who was
I want to see Yoda with the teenage angst.
Yeah, no kidding, hey? Well, I don't know if he's teenage angst, because in Empire, he says for 900 years he trains Jedi. Yeah, so, like,
yeah, 100 years right. ago. So he's not a teenager.
Maybe he's just a grouchy old man, and he's not, you know, in the retirement home age yet. But
no, he's already a grouchy old man when it's Hermit Yoda. Just
that
saying.
He's more of the kooky old man. he's gone. But no, so I'm really curious to see what they're gonna do with it. Regardless, I'm gonna watch it. I'll most likely enjoy it.
Yeah, me too. You know, there's always room for more Star Wars content in my world.
Exactly.
So on to our miscellaneous question for the podcast. I was reading an article and it asked a question. It said, "What is the greatest portrayal of Batman's Joker?" And let me start off by saying that I think this is a better discussion question than who is the greatest Batman. Because first of all, the portrayal of Batman, I don't feel is actually all that important. Because what's important is the portrayal of Bruce Wayne. Because when you're a superhero and not in the mask, that's when you actually get to find out who they are, right? So I think, you know, who's the better Bruce Wayne would be a better question. But anyway, secondly, when you look at the list of people who have played Joker and you get an understanding for how diverse that character is, you know, Batman is one of the most interesting DC heroes, but I don't think he's as interesting as all of these different Jokers that we've had.
No, I 100% agree with that. Like, I mean, there's a reason why the Joker pretty much has been added into almost every piece of Batman. Like, anytime Batman has been either featured in a movie or a TV show, the Joker in some way it has been, you know, brought into it. It's like Professor X with Magneto. You know, you kind of can't have one without the other, because they're such a, you know, symbiotic relationship, the way they coexist. Like, the Joker doesn't exists, like, he's not out there to kill Batman. He loves Batman. Batman's what makes his crimes fun. He likes to torture Batman and make Batman's life live in hell. There's multiple stories where something happens to Batman and Joker's upset because, well, now he has no, there's no point, there's no fun in it, you know? So it's always a really interesting relationship between the two of them. I 100% agree with that.
So let me list the Jokers that I looked up. So Cesar Romero in the original Batman series. We have Jack Nicholson in the 1989 Batman. We have Mark Hamill, who does the voice of Batman from 1992 all the way to 2016 in a whole bunch of different ones. Personally, The Killing Joke is probably my favorite of the group, but let's move on. Heath Ledger, of course, in the Dark Knight series. We have Cameron Monaghan in the Gotham TV show.
Who is also in Jedi Survivor.
Oh, right. Yeah. And we have Joaquin Phoenix in Joker and in the new one coming out soon. We have Jared Leto, who was Joker in both Suicide Squad and the Justice League, Zack Snyder's. And then we have Barry Keoghan. I didn't say that right. I don't know. Anyway,
I think you
Barry,
did. That sounded right.
Keoghan, who was in The Batman from 2022. That's a lot of Batman. That's a lot of Jokers.
You're missing a Joker there, I just noticed.
Oh, which one did I?
Zach Galifianakis. He voiced the Joker in the Lego Batman movie.
Oh, yes, of course. You're right. I did forget that one. And I remember reading that one. I just must have missed it when I was putting them in. So, Noah, who, in your opinion, does the best job of portraying the Joker?
See, and like that's... It's a tough, like, because it's really tough. There's,
in some honestly, ways, it's like comparing apples and oranges.
Yeah, because you know, like,
so different, right?
You know, like, I could probably go out and say Jared Leto will be at the bottom of my list for Jokers. I did not enjoy his portrayal. Heath Ledger, he was fantastic at The Dark Knight as the Joker. I'm very curious to see what Barry Keoghan, how his Joker in the future upcoming Batmans will be. My personal pick is, I think, Mark Hamill. That would be my pick. Like, he's been doing the voice of now he's not a physical Joker. He's the voice of the Joker, but he's been doing it since the 90s, like 92. I believe he still is doing it in some of the animated shows. I don't know what's the most recent one, but as far as I'm aware, if you ever watch Mark Hamill talk about voice acting in general, but especially voice acting the Joker, like, he loves Star Wars. He loves Star Wars fans. He, you know, you see him, he gets excited, but when he talks about the Joker,
love might be too strong. I think he appreciates Star Wars and the Star Wars fans, but I don't know if he loves.
Yeah. He probably loves how rich it made him.
Well, yeah, but I mean, as far as a character, I don't know that he loves Luke Skywalker. He appreciates
maybe
what Luke Skywalker, you know.
But you see him talk about the Joker and portraying the Joker, and he just seems like a giddy little kid. He is so excited to talk about it, and I mean,
that's love.
Yeah, 100%. You know, he loves playing the Joker as much as Harrison Ford hates playing Han Solo.
Yeah, I think you're spot on there.
You know, sure. Like, and like, I, in my opinion, he has the best Joker laugh out of all of the Jokers that we've seen on movies and television. He would probably be my pick. And, you know, like, probably a lot of people don't know that Luke Skywalker is also, you know, the Joker, but I'm sure if people, like, you listen to other voice acting things where Mark Hamill has done, and you can hear almost certain characters, you can hear a little bit of that Joker tinge, you know, like, it's, I think the Joker, a Joker impression, you know, if you would, it's easy to do, but it's difficult to master. And I think he's definitely, like, he has it down to a T. You know, he becomes the Joker when he's voicing him.
I think, personally, I think the Killing Joke is the most well-written Joker.
Yes, I would agree with that. It's one of the best written, like, at least in modern day, like, one of the best written Batman comics.
Yeah,
you know?
For sure.
But no, 100%. Like, he's so fantastic in that.
Now, I enjoyed Jack Nicholson as the Joker back in the 80s. When Heath Ledger did the Joker, I would, like, I've said for years that was the greatest portrayal of the Joker until I watched the 2019 Joker with Joaquin Phoenix. Honestly, like, that one, I would put that one at the top for portrayals of the Joker.
You know, funny enough, actors playing the Joker, there have been two times that they have been Oscar winners because of their role as the Joker. Both Heath Ledger and Joaquin Phoenix have won for their portrayal of the Joker, an Academy Award. Now, Heath Ledger's was after he died, so maybe that had a little bit to do, but it was still absolutely, you know, like when they're in the role of the Joker, both Heath Ledger and Joaquin Phoenix, they, you know, you don't see them as Heath Ledger and Joaquin Phoenix. Like, that's the thing is, especially with Joaquin Phoenix, he's such a versatile actor that regardless of the role he plays, like, I don't, even though he's a he's a face like Tom Cruise, like, oh yeah, that's Joaquin Phoenix, he becomes the character, you know, he becomes Arthur Miller and he becomes the Joker, you know.
I agree. He's so good at that, right?
And his laugh, as much as I love Mark Hamill's, like, Mark Hamill's is, that's a Joker laugh. Joaquin Phoenix's Joker laugh is so unsettling.
Yeah, and it should be.
You know?
Yeah,
It's almost a little bit more, kind of almost like, his character is a little bit more based in, like, you know, you see the Joker in The Dark Knight, and he is, like, he's the Joker, he's a supervillain, but the Joker in the Joker movie, he almost has a little bit more of a, like, this could be a real person. This could be something that somebody could actually do, you know?
I agree, yeah. It's kind of scary that way. I remember when I watched it, and I kind of sat there at the end and thought, like, this could happen. Yeah. I hope that nobody watches it and gets the idea that they want to do this. I'm looking forward to the sequel. They're making a sequel for it. I'm really looking forward to it.
People have been inspired by the Joker and done pretty heinous stuff. So yeah, I don't know. True. I don't know if Joaquin Phoenix is. But yeah, no, the next Joker movie, because Lady Gaga is going to be in that one as well. So.
Yeah. I'm really looking forward to it. Yeah. You know, you're talking about Joaquin Phoenix, how he becomes the character in the role. I wanted to make the opposite of that, and this is going back to just watching Dune 2, and I thought Christopher Walken was terrible as the Emperor in Dune 2. It was Christopher Walken. It was him. It was just, hey, I'm Christopher Walken. I'm the Emperor. Like, that's what it felt like when I was watching it.
Hey, 100%. I do agree. That was, what's his name? Stellan Skarsgård as the Baron. And he just completely becomes the Baron.
Different person.
And I'm just like, oh my gosh, like, he's so creepy. And then I'm like, oh, and Christopher Walken's here.
Yeah, exactly. Is he going to start dancing for us?
Who invited this guy? You know, like,
that's funny because we talked about him last time being connected with it before. Yeah. But man, I think that was poorly cast. I don't think he should have been.
Yeah, no, I agree. I read a thing saying, what was it called? Anthony Hopkins, someone was saying, would have made a great, like, whatever, the Grand. I was like, oh yeah, that would have been fantastic. I mean, Anthony Hopkins is great in everything he does, but no, yeah, it didn't, like, ruin the movie, but it did take me out a little bit. I'm like, oh, he only has one character, you know, it's just Christopher Walken.
Exactly. All right, well, we have, like, a ton of other miscellaneous questions we can answer, but we're approaching the hour mark, so I think we're gonna have to leave our other miscellaneous questions for next time. So people can wait anxiously on the edge of their seats for the next podcast.
Yeah. Make sure you tie yourself down. We don't want you falling and getting hurt and stewing us for making you fall off your chair.
They had me on the edge of my seat and I fell off and I've fallen and I can't get up. All right. So thank you everyone who's tuned in and stuck with us. We really appreciate you listening. And until next time, I guess we will see you at the movies.
See ya.